Welcome back to the Roundtable. I'm Sarah LaDuke.
Lights up on Washington Heights, up at the break of day. I wake up and I got this little punk I gotta chase away. Pop the grade at the crack of dawn, sing while I wipe down the awning. Hey y'all, good morning.
In 2008, In the Heights was nominated for 13 Tony Awards and won Best New Musical, Choreography, Orchestrations, and Score. It was also nominated for a Pulitzer Prize for Drama, and it introduced the world at large to the diverse and impressive talents of its writer, composer, lyricist, and star, Lin-Manuel Miranda. The writer-composer-actor worked with Stephen Sondheim and Arthur Lawrence on the 2009 Broadway revival of West Side Story, specifically swapping out English lyrics for Spanish in portions of songs sung by Puerto Rican characters. He performed in the City Center's encore presentation of Merrily We Roll Along in 2012, and he co-wrote the music and lyrics for Bring It On, the musical, which was nominated for a Tony Award for Best New Musical this past Broadway season. The founder of the performance group Freestyle Love Supreme, Lin has also acted on TV and in film, appearing on Sesame Street, The Electric Company, and House, and in The Odd Life of Timothy Green. He stars in the upcoming film, 200 Cartas. Lin's latest stage project is entitled The Hamilton Mixtape, and it's a hip-hop musical about the life of U.S. Founding Father and the First Secretary of the Treasury, Alexander Hamilton. This is a clip of him performing a song from the Hamilton mixtape at the White House Evening of Poetry, Music, and the Spoken Word on May 12, 2009. In this clip, Lin is playing Vice President Aaron Burr, and he's accompanied by Alex Lacamoire.
The $10 founding father without a father got a lot farther by working a lot harder, by being a lot smarter, by being a self-starter. By 14, they placed him in charge of the trade and charter. And every day while slaves were being slaughtered or carted away across the waves, our Hamilton kept his guard up. Inside, he was longing for something to be a part of. The brother was ready to beg, steal, tomorrow a border, and a hurricane came, devastation rained, and our man saw his future drip, dripping down the drain. Put a pencil to his temple, connected it to his brain, and he wrote his first refrain, a testament to his pain. Well, the word got around, they said, this kid is insane, man. Took up a collection just to send him to the mainland. Get your education, don't forget from whence you came, and the world is gonna know your name. What's your name, man? Alexander Hamilton. His name is Alexander Hamilton. And there's a million things he hasn't done. But just you wait, just you wait.
New York Stage and Film and Vassar College will present two readings of the Hamilton mixtape this Saturday as part of their powerhouse season. In what is a testament to the popularity of Lin-Manuel Miranda's work, both readings are sold out and even the waitlist is closed. Still, I was fortunate to grab a few minutes with Lin just before rehearsals began for the readings at Vassar. Lin-Manuel Miranda, welcome to the Roundtable.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
So we'll start with the matter at hand and expand. Why Alexander Hamilton?
You ever read a book and fall in love? That's what happened to me. I was going on vacation with my then-girlfriend, now wife, and it was my first vacation from Heights. I had a week off in the summer, and I grabbed Ron Chernow's biography of Alexander Hamilton off the shelf at Borders when bookstores still existed in New York. And, you know, I just wanted a big, long book to zone out to. I love historical biographies, and I didn't know much about Hamilton other than what I'd learned in history class in high school, and I said, well, at least this will have a cool ending. Because that's mainly what people know about Alexander Hamilton, is how it ended. And so I just fell in love from the first chapter. I think the things that resonated with me about his story are, one, it's not only an immigrant story, it is the proto-immigrant story. It is, if the myth of the American dream is immigrant comes here to work hard and make good, that's what Hamilton did in spades. He, you know, he came here on the strength of his writing, got a scholarship because he had written a poem that was so good, people collected money to get him off the island of St. Croix and send him to get an education. He sort of immersed himself in military history to make himself useful in the Revolutionary War until he was recommended to George Washington by three separate sources and became his aide-de-camp. He was fluent in French and in English, became an indispensable, you know, most of Washington's correspondence during the Revolutionary War is in Hamilton's handwriting. He sort of ran the office. And the whole time itching to fight, miserable because he wants to fight, because he knows social mobility only occurs through military service in this yet unformed nation. The first letter we have of Hamilton is him writing to a friend at age 14 saying, I wish there was a war. So this guy knew what he was doing. And sort of just became first Treasury Secretary under Washington, and then caught beef with every other founding father. I mean, really thought he was the smartest guy in the room. He just happened to be in a room with Thomas Jefferson, John Adams, James Madison. And these fights that they had over what the American experiment should be and how it should look are the fights we're still having. The stakes being that much higher because we've just escaped rule, British rule. And so everything, I mean, we think stakes are high now. We think we fight. But everyone is accused of plotting to overthrow the government every 5 seconds. And that's what it's like in an emerging democracy. And then, you know, basically, like, his words finally got him into trouble with Aaron Burr, with whom he'd had a professional friendship slash competition all his life, and then he got shot in Weehawken, New Jersey. And from the second chapter of Ron Chernow's book, I said this is a hip-hop musical, because it's all about words, and it's about using words to save yourself, to pull yourself out of your circumstances, and also to self-destruct.
How do you decide that it will definitely be a show that you're going to work on, and then you start developing it, and where do you begin?
I was writing it on vacation.
That's not much of a vacation then, Len.
But it was for me because it was this in a world I really didn't know a lot about, and I've since immersed myself in sort of this chapter in history. But I tell people I feel like a mosquito that hit an artery because there's so much there. I mean, there's so much about the way we live now that was being decided by these guys who were making it up as they went along. And that is interesting to me to capture. And it's interesting to sort of get into also the personal animus that gives rise to these policies we have today. You know, Hamilton having grown up on the island of Nevis, that was sort of the center point of the triangle trade, an island where blacks outnumbered whites 3-1, and he's a firm abolitionist all his life. Like, he's ahead of the curve of the rest of the founding fathers in that respect. One, because he is seen African Americans as people, like way before everyone else. Everyone else has, you know, seen them in through the rubric of this system of slavery. And so, you know, there's that. And there's also, yeah, it's just so rich because it's all the conversations we have now. And but it's like origin stories. It's like the origin stories of the United States.
Is there too much there for one show?
I don't know. I'm trying to get all I can. If I use Hamilton as a through line, that's my way of having the reality check with myself, because there's tons of detours I want to take. Obviously, there's so many interesting chapters. An example is Benedict Arnold, which I haven't figured out a way to work in. I don't think it's going to make it into the final cut of my show. Benedict Arnold was like a good-ass leader. Like, he was a really good military commander. Burr was working under him as a soldier, and Hamilton was one of the people who found out the plot. They intercepted these letters that Benedict Arnold was sending troop directives to the British. They go to confront him. It's Hamilton, I think it's Lawrence and someone else. I might be getting this wrong. I don't want to get it wrong on public radio. I'll really sound like a jerk. But it's Hamilton, two other guys go to like confront Arnold at his house, and Mrs. Arnold is there with an open robe, ranting and raving like a lunatic. They're going to put me away. I'm innocent. And they were also distressed at the sight of this like half-naked woman sort of babbling to herself. And they all fell for it. They all said, oh, this poor woman, she is innocent in her husband's schemes. They sent her back to London. History has since told us she was complicit. She knew what he was doing. She just put on like a naked lady raving act to get out of trouble. I mean,
who hasn't done that once or twice?
Not put that in your musical. And yet I can't, because it's just an interesting detour in this incredible story of sort of the Revolutionary War and what we found it after.
You could do the Founding of America Revolutionary Saga series. Do a play cycle.
Yeah. I mean, there's so many interesting detours. There's so many interesting characters. You know, some of Hamilton's friends include John Lawrence, who was really his closest friend, and spent a good amount of the Revolutionary War in the South trying to raise the first all-black militia and getting voted down at every turn. And, Lafayette, the Marquis de Lafayette, who was a French noble who came here and who just heard about what was going on in America, was like, I gotta go, left a pregnant wife in France to go fight. You know, these are interesting, rich characters. And so it's, you know, it's a feast in terms of detail, what you can draw upon.
One of the great things about New York Stage and Film Powerhouse Theater is that your work comes here at whatever stage it's at to get some eyes on it, to get some feedback, to really work on it, to dig in. What stage is Mixtape at right now?
I've been writing more or less chronologically, and I am, I guess the best way to put it is, I'm in cabinet fights. Like, I am in rap battles between Hamilton and Jefferson about American neutrality, about funding state's debt. This sounds very dry, but I swear it's actually really sexy and fun to talk about. Because they're the fights we have, you know. State's debt sounds boring, but it's actually the birth of Wall Street. It's the birth of our financial system. And Hamilton's plan was so far-reaching and so, like, existing from nothing, that everyone just thought, this guy's a maniac. And so I'm in the middle of all of that, of all of these fights between people that became fights between parties. And so, you know, we've gone through the Revolutionary War, and the stuff we'll present basically gets us through to the end of the war and a little after. I'm not up to the duel yet, but that's okay. I mean, that's the great thing about stage and film, is, like, we're going to present what we have, and we're going to present, you know, the things that work. We have a great stable of actors who are here and ready to learn. And
you have your guys here, your director, your musical director here to work on it with you.
Yeah. So Thomas Kail and Alex Lacamoire and I have been in a dorm for the past 2 days. We got here a couple of days ahead of the actors. And, you know, I've basically been just generating material for the past few months. And so the past week or 2 weeks or so is clarifying, is sort of honing. Like, we spent, we have this big end of act one in our heads for now number, and really just clarifying the beats. Like, it's a lot of literal things that are happening over the course of the number, and making sure they all get their space and due, and still build momentum as a musical number. And that's the fun thing that happens with collaborators that make your work better. You know, you see it in real time. You say, you sing this part and I sing this part. And, like, when we sing it through, are we getting the gestalt effect of what's happening? And I find them indispensable in that. You know, we have the experience of 6 years working on In the Heights together, so we have a shorthand. But at the same time, this story is so different from that, that it's sort of taking these skills we've learned on another show and applying them to a whole new meal. Headed for a new land in New York, you can be a new man. The ship is in the harbor now, see if you can spot him. Another immigrant coming up from the bottom. His enemies destroyed his rep, America forgot him. And me, I'm the damn fool that shot him. Alexander Hamilton.
Your Twitter bio currently is We Were That Kid, which, unless I'm wrong, is a pull from the rap you wrote for the opening of this year's Tonys. Neil Patrick Harris rapped the gist of that moment being, there's kids watching the Tonys, they're really excited, they're going to watch the, well, now I guess it would be not a VHS, but a DVR, over and over again. And everybody on this stage, we were that kid too, the kid at home watching the Tonys dreaming of something.
There's a kid in the middle of nowhere who's sitting there living for Tony performances, singing and flipping along with the Pippins and Wickets and Kinkies, Matildas and Mormonses. So we might reassure that kid and do something to spur that kid, because I promise you, all of us up here tonight, we were that kid. And now,
so you were that kid. When did you first know you wanted to work in theater?
In theater, probably sixth grade. But in terms of entertainment, as long as I can remember, you know, when I wrote the opening number with Tom Kitt for Neil Patrick Harris this year, Neil came in with the pitch. He said, you know, we're in Radio City Music Hall. I want it to sound something like, it's bigger. That's right, it's bigger. That's sort of all he had. And then he said, and I want super, like, elaborate verses and then a really simple hook. And so that's what we wrote. You know, for me, I was said, okay, so what can I connect to? You know, the word bigger doesn't sing. You can't hold bigger. It's a closed vowel sound. Mm-hmm. So what are the things that we connect to? And one of the things that I connected to personally was, you know, I've been writing songs as long as I can remember. And, like, I remember memorizing Mark Shaiman's Oscar medleys for Billy Crystal when I was a kid. It's a wonderful night for Oscar, Oscar, Oscar. Who will win? You know, this is the story about a man named Corleone. This man killed everyone, so now he's home alone. I remember doing the, like, memorizing them, VHSing them, pre-DVR, rewinding them, and performing them in school the next week to my bewildered friends being like, yeah, I didn't see it. And then me, don't worry, I'll do it for you. It's all wonderful.
The kids are like, I was playing baseball.
Exactly. So, you know, I think that that was a really important sentiment for myself, just to like, okay, why am I writing this number for CBS? Why am I writing this? It was, oh, because this is the thing that made me lose my mind when I was a little kid, was seeing someone up there, you know, at the peak of their powers, which Neil Patrick Harris totally is, and you know, wrapping an audience around his finger. And so, you know, he really deserves a lot of the credit for making it the bravura performance it was. Like, let's put in a magic trick. I won't introduce Pippin. I'll jump through the hoop, the Pippin hoop. I mean, that's all Neil making it harder for himself and making the bar that much harder to clear. And then, you know, us writing to it. It's like having an avatar. It's like, oh, he can do anything? Let's have him do this. So he really deserves a lot of the credit for Tom and I really going full out on that thing.
The first time that you wrote the closing number rap, where you watch the broadcast and sit backstage and fit events from the telecast, from the event, to the rap, I was watching the Tonys by myself, but a friend of mine came in, and she said, so that's it, best musical, what happens now? And I was like, nothing, it's over. And then Neil Patrick Harris came out and did that rap that you wrote, and I lost my mind.
Sutton Foster never lost her knack for talking smack and tapping a full-on assault attack. I'm awesome. Hugh Jackman, take that. Go ahead and roll the credits if you need to. I'm out of control. I'm on a roll. This is my Tony speed through.
How stressful is that, though, sitting backstage and writing it?
Not that stressful. Okay. Really more fun than stressful, because... You know, I brought Tommy Kail with me because Tommy just has a take on everything. That's the thing about Tommy, is like, he processes interactions faster than humans. So like, he'll be like, the joke is this. And then I figure out how to make it rhyme, and we do these couplets. And we also were freed by the fact that it was a cappella, so we didn't have to make it fit existing music. And the Tonys have a great producing team, you know, Ricky and Glenn are really good at what they do. So as we're writing, they're grabbing screen grabs throughout to augment what he's saying. So, you know, we're in a basement with a prompter, and I basically treat it like we're Sam Seaborn and Toby Ziegler from The West Wing. Like, we have a speech for the president. He hasn't written it yet. It's 20 minutes till he gets to the venue, and let's go. And so it's a huge adrenaline surge, to be sure, but Neil's so fearless that he makes you fearless. I mean, that's sort of the only proper answer. What was really gratifying about that night was, as it was happening, I got 20 texts at once, people being like, are you backstage? Which really, like, sort of moved me, because I was like, oh, people can tell.
Yeah.
Like, people can tell what a lyric of mine sounds like. Yeah. And hopefully that's a good thing, because it was people. I mean, before it was over, my phone had exploded. And that really meant a lot to me. Like, my friends being like, you're backstage at the Tonys? Before anyone knew I was back there, people knew.
Yeah, no, I had tweeted. I was like, if Lin-Manuel Miranda didn't write this, I'll eat my shirt. And then, yeah, it's so good. I didn't have to eat any T-shirts. So then does that make this year a little bit harder, fitting it to Empire State of Mind?
Yeah, but you have 10 couplets.
This was Tony Sunday, all up in your face. Billy Porter's gonna keep the Tony at his place. Then at 9 o'clock, you change to watch the games. The nerds, Game of Thrones, the jocks, LeBron James. Now you're watching Audra singing to her own flow. Audra's got so many Tony, she can host her own show. Horny dance, Tracy let Judith Light hit it. Edward Albee Pippin and Bettina Miller did it. Cicely Tyson, standing ovation. Kinky for the win, and the eyes of the nation are on.
So Audra's verses were evergreen and pre-written because she was out of town all weekend. She really had to, she learned it that morning and she was so game and so funny. But she, you know, we gave her a tape with the lyrics and she went away and learned it and came back. And then we have two verses. The music is pre-recorded and we have 10 couplets. And, you know, we could have cheated because one of the things that was helpful about the previous closing was that you're also reporting on everything that's happened. So 60% of it's written because it's musical numbers that happened. It's special Lifetime Achievement Awards that you know are going to happen. So you can write those and then plug in your couplets on like the Brooke Shields moment, the moments that you can't plan for. Mm-hmm. With this, we decided let's make it all about the winners so people know we really wrote it backstage. You have to just be more creative with your real estate. So, you know, we notice a theme of women winning. That's one couplet. And we can get three winners out that way.
Right.
I was in the funny position of, you know, there's a section in the Jay-Z song where he goes,
yellow cap, gypsy cap, dollar cap, holla
back. And I knew I was going to plug winners into that rhythm. So suddenly I'm in the weird position of rooting for actors with three-syllable names because it will make my life easier.
Sure.
So I'm like, come on, Judith Light. Who I happen to love, like, yay, Judith Light. But, like, she wins. I'm like, yes, Judith Light. and then, you know, who was it? Tracy Letts. Who was it who won? Oh, Courtney B. Vance. I was like, he's Courtney Vance tonight.
So when that happens, when you're approached to do the Tonys, you're potentially, I'm speculating and you'll correct me, writing mixtape, working on who knows what else, having a life, eating food. How do you balance your time? Because it seems to me you're a very hardworking and a focused person. Is it, do you forget to eat, for instance?
No, I never forget to eat, but life's the first thing to go. I mean, you know, to be honest, I'd probably be presenting more Hamilton if I didn't take a three-week detour to write the Tonys. That being said, I wouldn't trade that experience for the world. So, you know, that is the, if you're lucky enough to get to do this, the joy and the challenge is in saying no to good stuff so you can say yes to the best stuff. So, you know, I've said no to things that would, you know, make young me's like toes curl, like, what are you doing? But it's because, you know, I've really tried to carve out time to work on Hamilton as much as possible. But when Neil Patrick Harris calls, it's the president calling. So that was, you know, I work at the pleasure of the president.
Thank you. I knew this was going to be a really fun interview, and it's surpassed my expectations.
Oh, nice.
I can't thank you enough for taking the time. I know you're about to get crazy. So thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you.
To keep track of Lin-Manuel Miranda, visit his website, linmanuel.com, or follow him on Twitter. The New York Stage and Film and Vassar College's Powerhouse Theater readings of the Hamilton mixtape this Saturday are sold out. Powerhouse.vassar.edu for more information on their last weekend of shows this summer. That's this weekend.
Yeah, I'm a street light choking on the heat. The world spins around while I'm frozen to my seat. The people that I know all keep on rolling down the street. But every day is different, so I'm switching up the beat.
I'm Sarah LaDuke, and you're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.